were you some sort of doctor and they were about to test something?
Like a lie detector?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of knobs here, mate.
There's a lot of knobs around this place, for
there's
sure.
A lot of knobs. But don't, I mean, this is just, this is just something from back in the day, man. Right. Previous life. And I found it in the loft.
I've already learned what they all mean.
Yeah, yeah, it's all one, it's just one thing. It's all it is. Don't get too faffed with all the knobs. Do you know what I mean? Don't get scared of all the knobs. In fact, I don't even know why that one's pushed up, that slider. That can go down. So anyway, John, you yes. are here. John Gooden is here, finally on the couch.
Yeah.
So you kind of like, I got like a professional in.
Well, somewhat. I wouldn't go that far.
Professional.
Professional what? I hate to think I should have asked that question,
yeah,
should I really?
Shouldn't post that. Anyway, right, so John, let's, I'm trying to think of like,
You should have had these questions sorted.
No, don't, listen.
You've obviously been thinking about this for so long now,
I've obviously established, yeah, I think I established earlier that I plan nothing. The plan is to have no plan, using no way as way.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what, that's me.
No way as way. I might use that.
That's Bruce Lee, bro.
Yeah, I like it.
That's on his logo.
Yeah.
Anyway, so otherwise it's not a conversation. If I write out some questions.
I got you.
I'm not sure, most people don't really know this. So I probably shouldn't be telling the world, but I'm a little thick when it comes to academia. So if I was to write the questions, yeah, then second to read it, it would probably learn, for those that are old enough to know, it would probably sound like a Learn Direct advert.
I do know what you mean.
Maybe a little gremlin popping up. Ooh, trying to read a word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, so I just...
Freeball it.
Nice. Basking.
Freeball it. I don't freeball much, if I'm honest, but there you go.
Yeah, I've seen some of your handiwork. When we did a bit of commentary together before once, when I jumped in on the thing,
was key,
I did try and steal some of your lines, I must admit.
Yeah.
I remember that clearly. Anyway, so John, let's go down the martial art route to start with. The question I always ask, when did you start doing martial arts and why did you embark on that road?
Stephen Irwin's mum made me start doing martial arts. I was 7 years old. 7 years old, started in judo. We had just moved from London out to Radlett, where I still live now. And I think, like most kids, their parents are trying to get them into extracurricular stuff. And Stephen Irwin, who I was at school with, who I've become friendly with, he was doing the judo. So I had a little go. So I did that for a little while. I was a bit like Omar, I think. I was always competing up and down the country and stuff, doing judo from a very young age, but quickly got bored of it, like most kids do, and eventually went to karate with my uncle, who, bless him, is still training now. He's like a second or third dan under Sensei Noida, I think. Shotokan.
That sounds me, man.
Yeah, there you go.
I got a black belt under Sensei Noida myself.
Yeah. So I was in Bushi. Did I go to Harrow? Anyway, yeah. So I started in karate. I wasn't as competitive with karate, but I enjoyed it. But then none of my friends really did martial arts, so. My school didn't play football. All of my friends played football. I was doing rugby and swimming and cross country and all that sort of shit. Cut a long story short, I ended up getting into boxing in my teens when I was at uni. My mum and dad's next door neighbour used to be a pro boxer, represented England, amateur level, that kind of stuff. And my dad was really into boxing, and I always felt, because my dad was always kind of working, that, oh, what can I do to try and get his attention type thing? And I think I carried that well into adulthood, so it's his fault. Anyway, I started putting the gloves on. And
at what age was this?
Pugilism. Was it around 18? Yeah, I'm gonna say 18. And I ended up, I was really into it, really into it, and, you know, trying to go down the novice ABA's route. And I was getting a lot of attention from the coaches and stuff. We're at St Albans. And it's a really good, really good amateur club. A couple of Sean Murphy, I think his name. So we had a couple of guys that won Lonsdale belts and stuff like that. But I was also at uni at the time, and it was all a bit too much. I started getting headaches, and I don't think it was anything to do with the boxing, but it was pretty spar heavy. And yeah, I had a couple of goes. I got in the ring a few times, but I think that's one thing I've always struggled with, that sort of pressure of competing. But I did that, and again, because none of my friends were really into it, I ended up falling out of love with it. Plus the headache thing freaked me out a bit. I went back to football, and then football's just bullshit. Then found Muay Thai, was in Jiu-Jitsu at London Fight Factory, and then Cliff Burra, I think he was doing the Muay Thai school there. Then I went to Minor Tools, found MMA. I really wanted to do MMA, but I couldn't find a class. I didn't know where to go. And the interweb wasn't very good back then, and I was very bad at it. So couldn't find anywhere. And eventually, after, you know, learning the internet a little bit, I found Mark Chen's school in Rainers Lane with Max, Dennis and Sutherland. Hayden was there. Danny was there. I think Dave Waters was there at the same time as well. Ahsoka was there, and yeah, we were with Mark for a little while. I think Jamie Peach, who's quite key to this, because Jamie came to your class,
yeah,
and I think he told a lot of us about this UFC guy, David. Oh, where's he? Didn't think he was anywhere near, and you were only down the road. So when Mark decided to go up north, I think before then I'd actually had a private with you. I came to your mum and dad's place, yeah, and I had a little. We had a little private session in your shed.
In the shed, yeah, yeah.
And that's where that was. Yeah, that was kind of where the transition had happened. I went from football back to combat sports, and I was old by that time. I was never really gonna, you know, make it right everything, despite probably having grand ideas at the time. But that's how. Yeah, that's pretty much the journey, and here we are, many years on.
Yeah, because I remember Rainers Lane. I trained there a little bit. But it was kind of in that transition where I think the guy, Steve Dempsey, was teaching there.
Right.
Who I think Mark sort of took over from.
Okay.
I think Mark used to train there with Steve when he was in uni and stuff, back and forth. And then I think Steve sort of just said, look, I'm sort of done trying to juggle this with my job and stuff, so I'll give it to you. And I think because I left, or I think what happened is I was training there, like, I think only on Wednesday night. I think that's all they had there.
Right.
And so I would meet Dr. John there. And who else was training there? I think that was probably about it. And then we would go, we found out about on the SFUK freaking forum.
Right.
That some guys were getting together on a Sunday in Slough to do some grappling. So we would go there. And then then they kind of got a few guys, like a couple of Zay's brown belts in at the time to teach jiu-jitsu. Then that turned into Thursday, and then like Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. And then so the only days I could sort of, I used to train at Rainers Lane on a Wednesday. And then everyone would go, oh, let's train, let's do another night. And I used to do a Monday night like JKD, but then we moved that into my place. But then try to do the MMA.
Right. Yeah,
some of that, because I think that was a few, couple, maybe 2 or 3 years.
What year was that then?
After I was maybe a couple of years after I had been started training with Eric.
Okay.
I think so, probably around 2002, maybe 2003.
Yeah, I think I was with Mark. 2006.
Yeah, so that would go on like that, and then I would be teaching on a Wednesday night, so I couldn't make the Rainers Lane spot.
Maybe it wasn't that.
And then,
anyway, yeah.
Yeah, then it would have been like, so it would have been around that, because if I'd have fought in UFC already by then, it would have been around 2006, 2007.
Okay. Right.
And then I think maybe a few years on, maybe 2008, 2009, you guys sort of started feeling, I think Jamie come to mind. And
yeah.
Because when he was saying that Mark was starting to, he was moving up north,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I think with combat sports, I've always been, as I said, none of my mates did it. So it's always a bit of a weird one when you've got to go down to a gym. Now, MMA didn't have the greatest reputation. So essentially, you're going down on your Todd to a fight club and you have no idea what you're going to be met with. And that's the same for boxing. So when I went down to St. Albans, same thing again. And I trained up at All Stars as well in London, and that was a bit of a gnarly experience. But you're going in and you're going to get beaten up. And I've always been a skinny, not the sort of intimidating looking fella. So you're sort of cannon fodder. I've never been particularly good either. I've always gone in as a beginner for these things. So it's quite an intimidating thing to to do, although I've done it a few times now, as I say, the judo and karate thing aside, then you go to boxing and you try another club. I tried to go to Catalans in Bushy. They really, Ricky English, he was a very good boxer. He was doing some really good work with pros. I went down there. I was going to start training, and then I got caught by my coach from St. Albans, and he sent all my papers back to the ABA, and he freaked out because I'd gone down there. It was political. But if people think jiu-jitsu is political, holy shit, you want to check out boxing. My God. Going down to London Fight Factory, I didn't know what I was going to be up against. But the jiu-jitsu down there, I think, was very good, and I think a lot of those guys are still around. But I had no gi. I had like a little Nike dry fit long sleeve top, and I would turn up in that. Because it was so far away, I'd stick around for the Muay Thai, and people would be like, almost think it was insulting that I'd try and do double classes. But, I mean, it was so far away that I was just couldn't, I couldn't find any other places. Yeah. And that's when Cliff was saying to me, don't mean to be funny, but you do know that Minotaurs is kind of near you. And I was like, yeah, I know, but, I kind of know you guys now, and I'm here and sort of comfortable. Because you don't want to keep going around and getting bashed up and earn your stripes every time.
Yeah.
But that's essentially what happened. But the reason I say that was when Jamie was the litmus test, really, because he was coming to you, and it wasn't like you were all fucking, like, everyone's getting killed. It's not people are dead bodies everywhere, because there's a UFC guy and he's just going to fucking beat us all up. And that was always a bit of a worry when you're training in different places. But it was an easy transition. And, I'm very grateful for what we learnt with Mark. But, my journey's been with you since, what, 2009?
it's hard to keep track of it all.
Of course.
But it's been a while now. I mean, I remember, you would come down the scout hall and train with us. And then a few of the guys there were just sort of starting out fighting. I know Max was kind of starting out to,
yeah,
he'd already had a couple of fights, I
Max
think.
Max was pro at that point. Hayden, possibly. I think Asanka was doing amateur stuff, combat sports.
Yeah, I think stuff. So, yeah. I remember seeing Hayden at one of the trials, at the combat league trials or whatever, and he was down there on his own. And that was probably another sort of, like, I helped him because I recognized him. Yeah, where are you training? Blah, blah, blah. So I'd help him out. So that probably got back and made the transition of,
And Mark was all right with it, I think.
I'd met Mark or knew Mark somehow. I think maybe I'd been down there.
Well, you guys weren't miles. What, was he bantamweight?
Yeah, he was fighting the same sort of time I was.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure maybe he'd been down there a couple of times when he'd been back home when Steve was teaching there.
Yeah.
So maybe I knew him that way.
Another thing that I'd missed out was I was training in Hemel. There was a collection of people that had gathered in this place up in Hemel. And we had Dave Scarborough, Dave Waters, Chaz, Gareth, the judo guys.
Yeah, yeah.
A few boxing guys and then some grapplers. And it was just a few people that were all from different teams would converge. And we would learn together, but spar as well, but from different collections. And that was pretty good. Mark would go up there. Then we had guys like Lola every now and then. He would pop up. And that was good. I enjoyed that. That was probably when I feel like I was my most sort of, for where I was at with my skill set and fitness, probably my most fight ready, because I was young enough to be training a lot. And I was with good guys, but they were all sort of early in their pro careers. It was good. It was good training up there as well. And it was all, it was around that time, I think. I don't know if I was coming to see you at the same time, but I think it was, I can still remember Mark being down on the mat there, and it was around that sort of transitional phase.
Well, it was one of those times when you sort of like, you might have had one place that you went to, but you might have only been there twice a week or once a week.
Yeah.
So you had to fill the rest of the week up.
Yeah.
So, all right. And chances are, is one of the places that you went to, they hired that spot. So it wasn't like it was their spot or their building or their gym.
Yeah.
So to get another night was a little bit, right, we've got to wait till someone doesn't want Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump in.
Yeah.
So that's probably what's happening.
I think we had that both with Mark going down to East Coast, and then you were doing the same thing with Chris.
You did that. I remember you guys had been in East Coast before I went there.
Yeah, Mark was there. Because I think when I first, Well, yeah, one of my first sessions. Max took the session, and bless him. Just I can remember back in those days, like Max trying to take the classes as well, and he's just getting frustrated with us all because we're fucking useless. Shrimp, like what the fuck was that? I can remember Max just trying to manipulate our bodies into position, trying to do stuff. But yeah, we went down to Eastcote, and then I remember going down there like with you as well. So it's funny how it all grows and everyone goes off, and Chris Ferran's obviously developed his teams differently, and yeah, but everyone's been around similar, under the same roof a lot of the time.
Well, this, I mean, you're all pretty close, and it's, that's how like a scene develops. Yeah, that's how like the community develops.
And rivalries, apparently. Not that I really, you know, I've never really got into that so much, but...
Yeah, well, that's probably for another time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but, so, yeah, I don't want to get into that.
No.
But no, what happens is certain people have certain ways of doing things.
Of course.
And if it's not the same sort of way you would do it, then you know, it's like people grow apart.
Yep.
And maybe, like, what gives someone the opportunity in the beginning... You know, like, I mean, the only reason we went to Eastcote at the time was because, again, we had a Wednesday night in one spot and we needed another night. And I didn't want to, like, I popped down to Chris's because they said they have jiu-jitsu there, and I had a friend of mine that I thought was teaching there. That I sort of probably met him when Zay and everyone did a little camp in Torquay.
Okay.
So I saw pictures of him teaching there. I was like, all right, I'll pop down there if he's teaching there on a Thursday morning or whatever. And then Chris was like, oh, no, he's not I turned up and it was only Chris and two other, like, youngsters that were training. So it was like, oh. So then it ended up them asking me to. And I think I was a purple belt at the time.
I remember this, yeah.
And I would help, and it was like, all right, you should teach the class. I'm like, listen, I don't really want to... You know, because you guys go to Hodge Gracie.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like spitting anyone apart. Or I don't want to be like seen as teaching here. So listen, I'm happy to come and train with everybody because it's right around the corner from my house. But I don't want any money. I don't want any anything like that. But just let me use the place on a Saturday. You don't use it. It's shut. So let me use your spot. Let me use your mats on a Saturday and we call it that.
Yeah.
And that's how that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's how we used that place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we would get another spot where we was in the scout hall, and then it was, right, now we have Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and a Monday. Right, cool. We're covering the days.
Yeah.
You know, we're covering the days. And then I think we had guys fighting a few of the shows, but then the Watford show come up.
Yeah.
Right, so, and again, you helped play a big part in that. So the Watford show, a couple of guys would fight on that show, but then I think they did about three or four shows there.
Because I remember being with Mark, and I was at that show with Jamie, because Jamie was supposed to fight, and he never got his fight.
Yeah, it's called like Survival Series or something.
Like yeah, so I remember being there under Mark, but then a few shows on, I was there with you, so...
Yeah, I think what happened, they come in at one point when we was in the scout hall. I remember them, the guy coming in.
Is it Ben? Is that his name?
There was two of them.
Okay.
And what happened is they both fell out, and one of them asked, like, me and Max, or maybe asked Max to help matchmake, and then Max asked me to help matchmake, and then I just got Max a fight on the show, and then I started matchmaking. And then I think the one dude already... did the show, left, he went off traveling somewhere, and then his mate that he got involved to help us didn't really know what to do, so I got left to do it all. And it was just crazy night.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy night of all things going great, like things just popping up that I didn't know existed, or I didn't know someone else didn't organize or whatever, but we managed to pull it off. And then that's when, like, One of the guys, Sunil, would help me.
And he's the, by the way, I remember listening to the Charlie podcast.
Badgering me into doing it.
Sunil's the number one guy. Who's still with you?
Yeah.
Sunil's the first guy.
Yeah, but he won't do a podcast.
Yeah, but he's the first guy. Because I remember Charlie coming down to the gym. So, and I can't remember anyone else Maybe, I don't know if Danny and I came to you at the same time, but I think Sunil is, and maybe Dr. John, I think they were the only ones that I saw on the mat.
Well, Sunil and Dr. John would start training with me in my house, in the shed.
Yeah.
But it was Sunil's
skill set reflects that. I can say that, Sunil, because you and I are the same.
Sunil is the catalyst for me getting a full-time gym.
Right.
But before that, he was the catalyst to starting the show. Otherwise, I would never have done
it. Wasn't it?
I would never have done it.
Yeah.
Now we've got to do a show, Dave. It's really cool. It was fun. I'm like, nah, man. I ain't doing another one. And I literally, we was at a meeting. I said, listen, with the guy that did the show with me, I said, you two have it. Do you want any guys fighting on the show? Give me a call.
Yeah.
And Sunil come running out going, no, I can't do it to him. I need to do it to you. Me and you do it. I went, no, you're right. And then he kind of talked me around and we started doing the show. And then as I think maybe the second one in, I think you were saying to me, you want to do the commentary on it?
I'll correct you. So do you remember that Hayden was sponsored by LA Muscle TV
yes.
or something like that?
Yes.
And they sent a female reporter down to cover
That's
the backstage activity.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And I'd harbored these intentions of being a presenter when I was like in my early 20s. Gave it a little go, worked at the BBC, blah, blah, blah. Didn't work. It didn't happen for me. And I went back and, you know, got a proper job and all that. And I remember saying to you, after we watched this back with our heads in our hands, knowing, you know, I think, because I was a little bit old, an older person who's now found this sport. So the sport was still this new toy for me. And I was a little bit older than like a teenager. So I see things differently. I see the struggles that you had as an athlete, you know, trying to build a business, trying to like compete, try and keep a family, Max the same, and then the wider people within the sport that I was meeting. And it's a fucking grind, you know. It's tough for you guys. It's a tough sport enough as it is, let alone trying to earn a living. And people just had the wrong impression of the sport. And she didn't help, bless her. It wasn't her fault.
But she just turned up and right, go.
She had no idea. You know, she was almost mocking it. And as much as some of the guys were playing to it, because and this is still a thing that I find with the sport, a lot of athletes aren't camera ready. They don't know how to act in front when they have a microphone in front of them or a camera. And they just end up probably doing shit that,
hello,
their
my
mates,
name is...
Or playing up to a stereotype because they're led that way and they don't know how to manage it. So anyway, I said to you, look, I'll do that at your next show. I'll interview all the guys. And you turned around and said, look, I don't have any influence over LA Muscle, but what would be quite cool is to have some commentary for the fighters. You know, we can give them something that they can look back on. If we have commentary, put a couple of cameras on it, it looks a bit better. So... in my head, I'd actually passed up an opportunity at the BBC to get involved in commentary. They were doing like an apprenticeship scheme and I kind of poo-pooed it. I specifically remember it. And I was like, no, commentary's not for me. But at that point, I just thought, yeah, maybe I'll give it a go. And in my little studio setup that I've got, I still have the same dictaphone that I used on those early KO shows.
Because what happened... I remember like a few bit, like even Brett. So Brett would go, oh, he had these great ideas about the show. Wrote out some stuff and I'm listening. Yeah, it's really cool, Brett, but let's just try and get through another one of these. You haven't done one yet, mate. And I'm telling you now, it's a night out.
Yep.
You got to get through it. And I said, listen, you've got an American accent, mate. So why don't you just talk to people? Like, why don't you just call everyone out? Why don't you just be the MC?
Yeah.
Just kind of like, nah, you do that. And it's great to see like yourself and even Brett. He ran off with it and done a load of stuff with that.
Yeah.
But you'd competed before this though. You did do like a little amateur.
I've done some amateur stuff.
No, did you do the combat trials? You did the MMA league, I think.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
you did one down in Paul, no? Paul?
Yeah, I did. I don't think I'd done it by that point, though. No, I was doing that. I was at Cage Warriors when I did that.
Oh, really? So you still hadn't competed then? Oh, okay.
No, I'd done some submission grappling stuff under Mark. And then I did another one. I was with you, but I think Max cornered me. Not MMA, just sub-wrestling stuff. Yes, yeah, so I've done bits, but not a lot. It was very, very infrequent. You know, I was working for my dad. It was serious. You know, I'm running a business with him and stuff like that. It was all encompassing. And then, I mean, I'll get into it. I'm sure we'll get into it. But things took a little bit of a weird turn for me in regards to competing. So whereas I would, and still to the day, would have loved to have tested myself under a professional rule set. Like something happened in my life that changed the game for me, and like no one, my missus would not allow me to compete. I don't know if you remember this time when it's like no headshots and all that kind of. Are you happy? Are you comfortable for me to talk about this?
Yeah, cool, man.
So,
so I remember you, like your friend had a kickboxing match, right?
Yeah. So basically, the group of people that I was training with in Hemel, a guy called Dan, who was someone that I trained with up there, really good guy. He went to school with my wife, and a lot of my wife's friends, who are now my friends, one of the guys was like an usher at my wedding. Earlier on, I was fitting a TV bracket for another one of the guys that was friends with this guy. So quite a close, yeah. Quite close. Well, he died in a kickboxing match in Hemel, and it changed fucking everything. Everything. And Max, I know Max was deeply affected by it. A guy that you train with, a guy that you like, he was a friend of mine. I was there. Scott was there. Scott and I were with Dan's girlfriend and sister. And because none of my friends, none of those guys were involved in combat sports, they looked to you. They're like, what's going on? Why is this happening? What's happened? And even when Dan's opponent walked out, he looked like fucking Van Damme. And my mate Dan this was his first fight in 2.5 years. He'd only had one before that anyway. So it was bad matchmaking. Yeah. You know, I remember them turning around to me, looking at me. I'm like, oh, it's okay. You know, the guy could just be doing curls in the gym and a bunch of setups. He might not be technically very good, but it turned out the guy was technically very good. And it was a horrendous, tragic incident. And you know, it's a nightmare. So with that, it would just been too selfish for me to carry on my journey in a competitive environment. Just couldn't do it. You know, Vicky said she'd leave me. My wife said she would leave me if I was even sparring headshots. So I'd be coming down to the gym, and it was, I didn't want to tell everyone that I was on the mat with, that we're like, oh, can we just not do headshots? And everyone's like, oh, sort of, why? And I'm not going to go, oh, well, you know, did you hear about that tragic accident that happened? That incident didn't happen. So I kind of had to, a few people knew, so I would be just trying to continue, but without the headshots thing. And you know, I've since had a bunch of tests done and I'm fine, so you know, those risks aren't necessarily there for me. But what that also did was it made me look at the sport on a whole different level, and I got involved with Safe MMA. Eventually I went on a little crusade. I remember going up to Mark Goddard with a presentation saying, look, we need to do something. This has happened. You know, you're the guy. Rosie Sexton was someone else that I was approaching at the time. And it was clear that I couldn't, certainly someone who had no standing in the sport, I wasn't able to do much with it. But eventually, actually, credit to Graham Boylan, he knew about what I'd tried to do in the past. And when Safe MMA was being spoken about, he put my name forward to be one of the board members. And it was a medical initiative to try and clean up the sport. And I'm very proud of the work that was kicked off there. It's now kind of forms part of the IMF or UK MMAF stuff.
So was you was commentating on Cage, was it?
At that point, I was, yeah. So, I know we've skipped about a bit, but I just kind of just joining those dots is to say I couldn't necessarily fulfill any kind of ambitions I had in that sense. So I didn't want to walk away from the sport, and I still enjoyed training and learning, but also again that desire to represent the sport properly and not see it fall over. You know, it's still, in my opinion, quite a fragile house of cards in the UK, as
yeah,
we've seen in Ireland.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah,
there's no foundation. That's not true. But the underpinning isn't as solid as people think, and it's very unique. You don't often get a sport which doesn't grow from the ground up. Our sport is pretty much, and maybe this sounds biased, but it's all dependent upon the success of the guys at the very top, which is the UFC.
Yeah.
And they drip down,
yeah.
And they try and help underpin stuff and then grow it from the ground up. But it's a very, takes a long time to get that done. There's a lot of cultural issues and they're trying to do it on an international level. And the US is in a very different space to what we are in Europe. So yeah, it really got me.
Yeah, but I think in this country, it's still young, isn't it?
For sure.
It's what, 20? Maybe in his 20s, 20 years maybe?
Yeah.
So really, if you think about it,
in
business or in a sport.
Compared to football or rugby,
It's going to take like my generation, your generation, and then the next guys to really keep pinching it together, you know what I mean? Because for me, it's been like a good 15 years of graft to see any sort of fruit.
Yeah.
You know, guys getting good fights, getting good on good shows, and people been out of train now on a regular in many spots full time. So it's taken that.
And then for them to get the recognition, you know, I've been so proud and it's been quite a moment to see, you know, when MMA got accepted in New York and now UFC fighters, MMA athletes. And again, I like to talk about MMA athletes as much as I work with the UFC. It's our sport. I represent mixed martial arts first. And to see those guys in the same arena as the boxing greats, you know, they're side by side now. They can say that.
Yeah.
And when we've got like, maybe we'll get sports personality of the year things in the future. I mean, Bisping, I think, has had an honorable mention every now and then in some sort of shortlist. But, you know, all of that's a bit of bollocks. But Bobby Knuckles, you know, he's Rob Whittaker was GQ Sportsman of the Year in Australia. Like, that fucking blew me away. That's amazing. I was so chuffed for him. But I think it shows just how far we've come in the sport. To think that he's gotten there ahead of all the other great sportsmen and women that they have in Australia, a sporting nation. It's incredible. But we're a long way off.
I mean, yeah, it has grown in the last, say, 5-10 years immensely. But still, yeah, still got a little... We're still lagging a bit in this country, I think.
Yeah,
still, I think. I mean, people know what we do. This is a good thing. I got pulled over by the police the other day, and then straight away it's not like you play rugby. He's like, you're an MMA guy. I'm like, yeah. So he straight away knew. It's like, and you see people now, they know.
Yeah.
They don't ask. They don't ask like. You know,
silly questions.
What's wrong with your ears and all that? A few people do, but is that a condition? You know what I mean, is that catching? But even we was in Stockholm and the dude in a sports shop. Oh, you play MMA?
Yeah,
I was like, yeah.
It's Stockholm because of Gustafsson.
Yeah, people know. People know about it. Most places we go, they understand what it is now, which is great.
It is great.
Which is great. And again, if you'd have, maybe it's like a swell, like if you'd have left old LA Muscle Girl.
Yeah.
If you just let her get away with it, you know, like making a little bit of a joke of the show, or not necessarily a joke, but not, you know, not being.
It was out of ignorance, wasn't
not,
it?
Not having any passion for the sport. Yeah. If you just let that go and let those, that kind of, you know, presentation of our sport. Then maybe it would have just fizzled out and dipped and gone if there wasn't people with passion doing it.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to do it for more than just a buck, but just to push it where it needs to be pushed.
Yeah, and then the only other kind of camera time or TV time we were getting was Dave O'Donnell on his Cage Fighter show. Now, you know, I do respect the good work that Dave's done, and I've had dealings with Dave, and I'd like to think, like, I respect him. I'd like to think it was mutual as well. But he and I come from very different ends of the spectrum on how to promote this sport, and I think I've said the same to him. Like, he's Men and Motors, I'm BBC. Do you know what I mean? But that's how he's earned. That's how he's been so successful.
I think but Dave's. I think the trouble is. Yeah, you need all the characters. But the thing is, sometimes like some people do like they go 2 steps forward and then maybe make a little step back. So sometimes, as much as you like back in the day, to promote this, even the UFC did it. Even the UFC did it. Like, no rules, and they do all that to get the attention. But then you get the fallout of that.
Yes, because sometimes. You do need to have these spikes, but then you can't maintain it. No. Then it's then what direction do you want to go? So that's why I was careful to say I very much enjoyed watching the Cage Rage stuff, but it was what it was, and then it's being dressed up. Very much lowest common denominator, girls, knockouts, blood, blah, blah, blah. And yes, it is that. And yes, this is a fight sport. However, it's also martial arts. It's also competitive sports. And let's not forget that. So there are roots in both. And I would try and play to the other side. Yeah. And there was no one really doing that a great deal. That's a very broad brush thing of saying, but no one on a like a high level,
you know, back in the day wasn't like that. Yeah,
it just wasn't like that. So there was a space, not that I really saw it like that, Dave, and you know that because you were the guy that offered me the job behind the mic. And when did I ever say to you, when I was doing KO MMA shows, oh, I'm gonna do this so I can get to the UFC one day?
Yeah, no, it was always for me, like I said at the beginning when we started this, I said I don't really have a plan. Seamlessly edit this together,
okay.
Seamlessly, you might want to cross your leg.
Which one?
I'm not sure. Anyway, so what happened here? Because my best forward planning, we've lost an hour of what we were chatting about. So good job, because some of that was a pretty close to the mark. We got to the point, I believe, where we were saying we just got you in the show, like, because no one else is around that we could just slot it all together. No planning and all that. I'm not sure what we didn't get from our conversation, but I think we went over, I mean, we'll put it out, and then what you think you've said that we didn't cover, didn't get on there, you just shut it on. So we've been here ages and we're cold and it's getting dark. So I think we maybe have mentioned, I think you was mentioning like you dropped in when you was like, that you continue to train, and that's the reason why the reason it's nice that when you do train, and the reason you keep training is to keep your idea and your language of the martial art in tune. So when you are commentating, you can speak of these things.
Yeah, it's twofold really. I have my own goals as a martial artist. There's someone who wants to, you know, stay fit and well, self-defense, self-confidence, all of that stuff. Then there's the team. As much as, you know, I'm not always around now, but I have a connection to you guys, and it would be crazy that after 10 years to just fucking throw that away. And it's very cool to see how all of this develops and individuals and how their journey continues to. But on the other side of things, there's a really cool byproduct in that it helps my job. And I think I get a little bit of respect and a point of difference in that someone who's a play-by-play guy, someone who's not the ex-pro, there's two defined seats in commentary. Usually you have the play-by-play, blow-by-blow, lead commentator, and then you have the analyst, the color commentator who does the analytical stuff, the person who can talk from specific experience. And normally they are former athletes or competitors, depending on what sport it is. So I'm not that person. But being on the mats and understanding the language, like we were training earlier, and you would phrase things a certain way. It is its own language sometimes, and to bring that through into commentary, I think gets recognized. And you know, it's for me, it's not about me and sounding good, but it's about appealing to as many different audiences as you can and be educational, so that guys that are just watching it for knockouts and everything are as interested as the white belt who is trying to understand something a little bit more, and not insulting people of a black belt level, and you are still doing a good service, you know. And we're still a young sport, which we said earlier, so I don't think that they always can expect that it would be so high level, and it's a big space to fill up.
Yeah,
someone who doesn't have a clue, someone who's been dedicating their life to the martial arts. So it's you try and do what you can, but for me it's important to be here, to feel it, to understand the journey, to see how that journey is different from your journey, to Charlie's journey, to Sam's journey, you know. And I know there are a bunch of guys right now in the team, but and I don't mean to leave anyone out, but that kind of thing.
No, but like you said as well, it's like all the stuff you used to do on my show, we used to travel everywhere to go train with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I will use you as well as like a bit of a measuring stick, because obviously you, back in the day when you first commentated on my show and you would travel out to different gyms, I'll go, oh, what's their gym like?
Right.
Is it good? Is it nice? Is it clean? Da, da, da. And then even now you go around the world with the UFC show, but also doing your, visiting and interviewing different fighters at at their gyms. And,
yeah.
You know, oh, what's their gym like? Is it good? Is it?
Yeah.
You give me a little insight into that as well. And I think from what you were saying, that, you know, your craving of the martial art as well, and you have your little show, like your side show on with Dan, on when you analyze the fights and stuff. I think you can see you're not just the guy on that side to, okay, everybody, here we are, this is the analytical show. Let's say Dan takes the lead on the analyst, but you still know you're not looking at him with a fog glaze thinking, I haven't got a clue what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and
plus you're probably eager to hear what he's got to say as well, which has got to help, no?
I think so I take a load from that. I mean, I don't necessarily have the physical capability to always implement what I'm learning, because we're looking at all the best fighters in the world, and they are there for a reason. I can't suddenly do a fucking tornado kick into a double leg. You know, it's not what I can do. But there might be certain movement patterns that I can use in sparring, or when we're looking at like a wrist bar technique or something that I've seen, like Khabib's. There are certain things you can do for sure, like easy things that you can integrate into your training that I'm picking up, getting reinforced in my time here and seeing its practical application. And then when I'm in commentary and someone has that, people don't always want to hear it from me, but I can tee up Dan and go, that right there, that's so difficult to get your post back. You might not be able to just do this from here, or how much does it suck to be in that position? I can be the sacrificial lamb
asking the question.
Because I can lead whoever's sitting there and then get that information told by them. People don't want to hear it from me, and it will be better told by someone that has a world title or has fought for a world title, for sure. But I think there is a big advantage about being here, you know, and I get it wrong. I've said some stupid shit before. But at the same time, I'm sure you as a martial artist in competition, you've tried to do stuff that you've had in the training room. You've tried to do it in a fight, and you've gone, why the fuck did I do that?
If I'm cornering, that happens. I remember cornering people and going, no, don't do that. That's never good. Okay, well done.
Yeah, thanks.
What do I know?
Yeah, yeah.
What do I know? Don't do that. That's never going to... What do I know?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, okay. Or I told him to do something and it's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, when you're talking...
And you're very much, you're not just sitting there, oh, no, stop, let's do that again. Because I got that wrong.
Live TV
you're on it.
It's
whatever happens, happens. Huh?
And people don't think, you know, I'm in position from just before 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'm going till nearly midnight.
Mm.
That's a long fucking time.
Yeah.
I don't know any different. You know, I've grown up in this sport on TV. I haven't come up from something else, like TV school. So that's all I really know. But that is a long time to be...
For sure, man. I mean, we just did this and it's the camera cut out. So I'm trying to talk to you and figure out what we did. And I'm just like, you know what?
And then have someone actually talking to you in
your
ear.
Yeah, I ain't got a clue what happened. So I'm just going to like do something else. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine it's tough, especially you got... producer in your ear.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements that you need to integrate into that show, but I enjoy the challenge, you know. You keep leveling up, you know, you keep doing,
and then you're on here,
and then here we are. Got the invitation.
Finally
I've been waiting
got
for
the couch. Right, well, I don't want to keep you all day, so I'm pretty sure when I stopped it before, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be a long one. So I don't think it's going to be as long as I thought because it's cut out. So that might be a good thing, I don't know. But when you watch it back, or if I watch it back, I tend not to do that. But if there's something there I forgot or we did or we didn't do, bloody bloody blah, then we'll get you back in. But we'll get you back in anyway, because I'm bound to run out of people next year, because every week I've got someone new. So I'm probably going to have to start again.
Regurgitating us.
Yeah.
Bring this back through.
I don't know, because like I did on my show, yeah? Who could I do a podcast with? Yeah. Who else doesn't want pain? I can just buy some lunch for. All right, perfect. Let's go. So I'm sure we...
Oh, that sounds good.
Sure we get the time again. So thank you very much, John.
No, thanks for
coming
on,
in
mate.
Again. And bon voyage.
Adios.